Welcome to another episode of Chad and Steve Have a Podcast. It's been a minute and we've missed you, and we certainly appreciate being here with you today, because today is a very special day, and longtime listeners to the podcast will recognize Kevin Espiritu as the guy from Epic Gardening. People who have searched out gardening information on YouTube will recognize Epic Gardening as one of the best gardening channels on the platform, with over 150 million views, almost 2 million subscribers. And if that isn't impressive enough, Kevin and the team over at Epic Gardening are coming off of their biggest view month ever in July 2022, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, is that true?
Really?
I didn't know that.
Breaking news. We'll talk about that and a whole bunch of other stuff, but put your hands together and welcome back to the podcast, Kevin Espiritu.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Am I the all-time most hosted guest now?
Congratulations.
Oh, hell yeah. I love it. I'm social blading myself right now because you said it's my best view month ever. I guess that's true.
Wow.
So let's go to the official statistic keeper of YouTube statistics.
Yeah.
And I see your bump in May of 2020 was 8.9 million video views. And last month.
Yeah.
Over 11 million.
What do you attribute that to?
I think we all know, guys. It's the YouTube shorts.
It's the shorts.
My goodness. The shorts. Yeah. Yeah. I was just pulling up the stats. Last 28 days, shorts, 10.2 million views. Normal videos, 3.7 million views.
Yeah. Now, we had you on the podcast when I think you literally like just had pushed the button on your first short, and you're like, I don't know, and I'm worried about the video flow, and I'm worried about if it affects the other.
Yeah.
And that's been, I got a bunch to say about that as well, but I would love to hear what has the experience been
like. So I saw you do it, Steve, and I saw yours literally everywhere in my short shelf for a while. And then
it's like a cheap suit.
You everywhere. Were there, man, but your stuff was great. And the crazy part is I was on TikTok in 2019. And then I was on Reels on Instagram as of like basically February of last year. And I knew Shorts was around and I still didn't really put any effort into it. And I think I was just scared to like jeopardize the main channel. And that's my sort of like, if I have one platform that's my baby, it would be the main YouTube channel. So I was like, what if something happens to it? And then I went to VidCon, a couple months back, June maybe. And I was like looking at all these literal kids that have made their lives from short form, right? From TikTok to Instagram to YouTube Shorts, then to YouTube long form. And I ran into a guy at YouTube and I was like, hey man, like, should I just be throwing my TikToks on Shorts? Like, let's just get real here. I know you don't really want to say it. And he's like, honestly, that's what all these kids did. And they're all sitting at 10 million on, you know, on TikTok. And so I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go cherry pick my best TikToks, the ones that have gotten, let's say, 700,000 views or more, whatever the threshold is. I'll download all of them over the last 2 years. Some of them won't make sense, some of them will. I'll schedule three a week and I'll just let it rip and see what happens. And that was maybe a month ago, a little bit less, and they've racked up like 15 million views. It's just dumb. Like, it's just, and it's content I've already made. It's people that haven't seen it because they're not on TikTok, they hate TikTok or whatever the case may be. And it's just, it's contributed. Let me see if I can pull it up, but the Shorts content alone, if I just click on that, has contributed 33,000 subs in the last month off of 10.2 million views. So obviously the view to sub ratio isn't that strong, but that's subs that I wouldn't have gotten otherwise, you know?
Everybody says, you know, short form content is here. Everything is short form content now. And do you think that, okay, are you okay with that?
No, I mean, not.
Are you doing it begrudgingly?
Well, no, I'm not doing it begrudgingly because I like to think I saw TikTok a little earlier than most, you know? And so I was like, look, like, there's going to be people who want to garden that are young. They're not typically consuming my long form educational content on YouTube. So I'll go to TikTok and then I'll go to Reels. And I think it's just the way to reach that segment now. And then what you do, at least what I've seen, the people who've been short form first, because it's crazy. Like, I'm sure all of us are sort of the OGs in YouTube, or at least Gen 2, call us. I started in 2013, you know, anyone before that was maybe Gen 1. All of us, we like kind of grinded it out. It took a long time to get to a million. And all these kids, they go short form, they'll get to a couple mil on TikTok, and they'll go to YouTube, and then they'll learn how to do long form off of their shorts, and their audience just naturally migrates upwards. So it's a total inversion on the form. And so that's, I guess, the way that it's happening right now.
See, I think that when I look at woodworking videos, short form videos, and I'm talking mostly about Instagram here, the reels, because that's probably where I consume most of that. Mm-hmm. It seems to me like they're becoming just garbage. I mean, and I'm there's some people who are making decent reels in my space, but a lot of them have kind of adopted this real like childlike format of like they just do the voiceovers of like some silly thing, and they're lip syncing along with it, and they're getting all these views. And I think, wow, is this what woodworking has become? It's kind of awkward and embarrassing to watch.
Yeah, I think I would actually totally agree, Steve. Like, there's a guy, there's a guy who's blocked me on every platform besides, I think, YouTube, in the plant space. Because I was like doing on TikTok, you can like stitch a video and you can react to the 5 second stitch. So I reacted to a couple because he really is that. Like, he's super loud, super obnoxious, crazy cuts and sound effects. And then like fully over half of his advice in the plant world is just blatantly wrong. Like, purposefully, he's got to know it, you know? So I got blocked, but basically he's seeing incredible growth. Like, I believe he's bigger than Epic on TikTok and YouTube. But then the question becomes, for what though? Because he has, at least to my opinion, like no greater sort of like mission to what he's doing. So he has like a couple random books he sells, and that's about it. And he can't, like, his only machine is churning out the only thing that's worked for him. The problem, it's like how you start is sort of how people know you. And he's kind of screwed now because he's started on this like flashy zero substance format that he can't escape.
Yeah. Where do you pivot to, and how do you sustain that?
What are you supposed to do? Yeah. Yeah.
How do you make a living off of that? I mean, cause they're not paying well. And if his only source of income is just maybe a couple of books, those aren't generating a lot of income. You know that.
Yeah. I mean, I think he self-pubbed it, so he gets a little more margin on it, but still, yeah. Like, well, it's just not like, I mean, look, you guys, you have a course, Steve, Chad, you've got a product empire with your wife, right? Like, that's what it's about. Like, that's at least if you want to build like a business off of YouTube, right? And so I think your point's totally correct, Steve. Like, I think the algorithms are so juicy right now. People are figuring out these crazy formats that work. Like, I don't know if you guys have seen it, but I've seen this format where it's an automated voice reading a Reddit post.
Oh.
And then someone jumping on Minecraft blocks in the background, which is like, it's like weirdly engaging, right? They figured it out. The concept, the prompt is engaging. It'd be like, I cheated on my wife and now she's threatening to kill me or whatever. And then it reads the prompt. And so you're like, okay, I kind of want to know what happens. And then the satisfying jumping in the background makes you be like, I have something to look at too. So they like totally hacked it. But what's that person who's creating that account actually going to do with that engagement? There's nowhere to throw it,
right?
You know, so short-sighted.
And you're just proving that people can be like preoccupied by like dangly shiny objects. Like, we really are getting to the point where like we're analyzing video content in such minute detail where we're just trying to find repeating patterns or colors, and it's so far removed from actually trying to like express an idea or share an opinion or make a point about something. And it is just about engagement. It sounds like you're using TikTok maybe as kind of like the sandbox, and then you see kind of what works well organically over there, and then you kind of cherry pick that stuff to put onto shorts, so therefore you're not really experimenting on shorts.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to throw a short up that I know is bad or I don't know is good, right? And so TikTok is way more forgiving. There's way less sacrifice, because if it doesn't do well on TikTok, it just doesn't, and it's not like people randomly unfollow you or whatever. So TikTok's kind of the proving ground. And I've even thought, like, you know, we just put one up about, does every fig have a wasp inside? Because fig wasps are how some figs, at least, are pollinated. And so this myth goes around. It's not even a myth. It's just that, you know, half the figs we normally eat don't require the wasp. So they're technically not in there. But they could be in theory. They're just not. And so I go, okay, this popped off on TikTok. We put it over on Instagram, did well. maybe I'll probably put it on Shorts as well, but maybe I could do an 8-minute piece on that and actually convey something real where I call up an entomologist, I call a botanist, and then we discuss that and we create a prepared piece. Like, I know the concept is good, so I just have to execute it in 8 minutes now instead of, you know, 30 seconds.
You just have to have something on there that says POV.
Yeah.
Can anybody explain to me what this whole POV thing means? I feel like I'm so, it means anything. I just got a comment today on a tape measure short that I did snapping it 10,000 times.
Oh, I remember
times.
That one.
POV, you have no life.
They don't understand.
Is that how POV
is? That's not what POV means.
But it seems like POV has become to mean point of view of the person, but it's not even that anymore.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
just a weird thing that, and everybody is using this on
yeah.
in short form
POV,
content.
You have no life.
I know.
That's so rude.
I don't even get it. I don't
get
it.
That's so funny. Yeah, I guess, I mean, what POV to me on TikTok at least was like expressing a different POV than the person. That person was like putting on the mask of someone else's point of view and then
yeah.
doing that, and it was yeah. supposed to be relatable. I don't really get that one either. I think they're just trying to dig you with a meme, you know?
They don't understand how to use those
yeah.
things, but
yeah.
those things change so quickly, it yeah. seems like.
We mentioned so Instagram funny. Earlier, and you have, it's probably the smallest platform which you tend to put a lot of effort into, and I don't know, do you make the content which you know is kind of geared towards reels that, and do you make your TikTok content mm-hmm. geared towards that, or do you just try to make short pieces of content and put it on each of these platforms?
Man, I've gone both ways. The problem is TikTok's native editing tools are just like 10 times better
That's
than Instagram's.
What Melissa says.
So what I'll do now is my Instagram's so buggy. I have an iPhone and I have an Android. They're both updated. The app's updated. I have so many bugs on Instagram that I can't trust making content natively in it.
Same.
So I Same just here. Don't anymore. And what happens is I'll make a TikTok. If it does well, I will download it without the watermark. And then I will, usually I'll either post-produce it by getting captions done and burning them in, or I'll like write the captions in the Instagram app. But even that sometimes bugs out on me. So lately, our style on Instagram's kind of changed. I used to use like the little text feature in the Reels editor, and now I don't because I just don't want it to disappear. But yeah, I'm kind of cherry picking everything from TikTok and putting it in my more like mature platforms that works, I guess.
Yeah, treat TikTok kind of like the Wild West. It makes a lot of sense. When's the last time you posted a picture on Instagram, like a photograph of something on Instagram?
You know, that's a good question. It's been a while.
I did this morning. I'm still old school. I still do that, even though nobody looks at
it. No engagement.
I just like it.
Because I Instagram's just not something I pour a lot of effort into.
Yeah.
It's not, I probably should, you know, I know that's kind of, when I post reels on there, they do really well. But yeah, nobody, you post a photograph on Instagram and it get like three views.
I know.
Or something.
June 27th for me, Chad.
Oh my gosh.
June 27th. And then the one before that was May 30th, but I knew it would do well because it was this like before after comparison, which is like one of the formats that I think still works. But yeah, there's just, unfortunately, it's weird because have you seen Adam Mosseri, the head of Instagram's like posts he'll make to the community? He'll do these updates. He'll say like, you know, here's what's coming with Instagram. Like, we're going to be featuring videos more. We're going to be recommending stuff that you don't follow, blah, blah, blah. And everyone's like complaining about it, right? And you see it on Twitter and you see it everywhere. I wish he would just come out and say the truth, which is, hey, look, all of you guys go to TikTok now. You don't come here. And when we
right.
when we let you post photos, you don't look at them. So what you say you want isn't what you actually want. So we're just making what we think you want. But he can't say that because that's too honest, you know? But that's the truth. I mean, I feel you. Like, it'd be nice to have some photos here and there, but I also kind of don't look at them. So I don't know what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah, it's true.
Do you feel as trepidatious as you used to about posting short content? Do you worry about the context of your channel or losing that cadence or falling into the trap of being one of those channels which are like, oh, now you don't care because you're just seeing what works?
Yeah, I think, so you're saying for YouTube?
Yeah, specifically.
Yeah, for YouTube, I'm doing an experiment for a couple months where I'm posting 3 a week on days that I don't post a long form video. And I'm assuming, I mean, I got this from the head of YouTube's algorithm at VidCon, at least currently, and I don't know if this is still true, at the initial outset of when they launched Shorts, the like Chad's view history on YouTube was connected short to long. And so what would happen is you'd go into the short shelf and you'd go watch, you know, 700 of Steve's woodworking videos, right? And then the second you come back out of that shelf and do a refresh on the homepage, it had no idea that you didn't only want to watch woodworking, because it messed with the algorithmic quality, and it would be like, oh wow, he just watched 700 of these in a row. And it just treated shorts kind of like any other video. And so they found that happening, and only short form, only the topics you were watching. So what they did is they disconnected the two. So your view history on long form and short is completely separate now. And what they recommend for each is completely separate, which kind of goes against a strategy of doing shorts, right? Because you'd think like, okay, well, hey, if Chad watches 20 of Epic Gardening shorts, I might want to show him a couple of the longs to like give him that taste. At least right now, apparently that's not happening, but they're working on making it happen. So I don't really know. I mean, I think as long as you make shorts where your brand and personality still comes through and you're not just one of these random things, I think it's probably beneficial.
So here's what I've been experimenting with is I've started posting full-length YouTube videos on Instagram as a reel, but they're, even though reel has a limit, you can still post them in the reel format. They show up in your reels section, but it's like a 7-8 minute
video. Really?
Or what. I think you can go up to maybe 10 minutes or something. And so I put it in that vertical format. I don't adjust it. It looks like shit. It's all like, you know, my face is half on in some shots and everything. I don't care. I thought, I'm just going to post these, see what happens on there. They do great.
No
they
way.
Get a lot of views, people commenting on them. It's kind of weird, and I just think that for a long time I was of this mind that if I make a video, the whole idea is to get people to watch it on YouTube because that's where, you know, there's AdSense and everything. But if I post, you know, a link or something somewhere else saying, hey, I've got a new video on YouTube, it's basically worthless. Nobody's going to take the time, or a few people take the time to go, oh, look, because if they are already following them on YouTube, they already know that.
They don't need
a reminder on Instagram. So I figure just post the whole thing. So I post these videos on there and the comments are all like, oh, this is great. I love seeing this video. And so these are people who never even knew it existed on YouTube.
Yeah.
So it's a totally different audience. But I'm gonna keep doing that.
I agree, man. Like, I think the biggest mistake, in my opinion, that creators make is they have a platform they hold precious, and then they use the other platforms to tell people about that one. Well, it's like, look, I'm on Instagram. I don't want to go to YouTube. And so I'll either just, I never say we have a new YouTube video unless it's a special one. And if I can cut it down for Instagram, then I will. Otherwise, I'll just say, go check our YouTube out in general. I'll let YouTube's algorithm tell them when the video comes out, you know? I think that's like, it's one of those things that like creators think the audience cares about, but they actually don't. Because if I go to someone's feed, I'm like, okay, cool. Like, I don't care. I was just seeing what you're doing in your stories. No. You know, I'm not going to stop my whole life to go watch your video. You know,
I'm not going to do two extra clicks.
Yeah. That's what it is. You know,
going to the YouTube.
It's crazy. But...
And you know, the thing about it is in like Instagram, if I'm there and I click like a link in the bio or something, it opens it up in like a web browser or something on my phone.
It opens it up in like an Instagram. Yeah, exactly. So it's like the experience
is
bad.
Really weird.
Yeah.
I also remember people telling us like, don't put clicks in between kind of what you want people to do. Don't give them like, don't go on Instagram and like you're saying, hey, go over to YouTube to do something. Because also algorithmically, Instagram doesn't want to promote that content on its own platform. So you're hindering your content just by talking about off-platform content in the first place. Do you still use Facebook for this purpose? Do you still upload your... Because I know, Steve, you were doing that for quite a while. Do you still do it as well?
So Facebook, I have Jelly Smack that handles that whole thing.
Oh, do you? You did it.
I never even really... Yeah, it's finally starting to pay off. It's doing pretty well. And they just cut the shit out of my videos and they look horrible on there. But I guess whoever's watching that on Facebook loves to see that
stuff. That's crazy. Yeah, Jelly Smack keeps emailing me. They want like a percentage of my shop revenue on Facebook. And I'm like, look, I'd rather just learn how to cut videos like you guys than give you the cut, for me at least, because I'm not giving you 8% of my store. That's just stupid, you know? But for like a beast, like a Mr. Beast or whoever, I'm sure he has a bespoke deal. But like if you weren't using Facebook and then you are with Jelly Smack, I think it makes total sense. I started square cropping our YouTube videos and cutting about 50% of the meat out of it, putting that up on Facebook, and that's done way better than just porting the YouTube videos over.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, and that's what they do. Yeah. Is they like totally optimize them. They'll take an 8-minute video and crop it to square and cut it down to like a minute or whatever Facebook, you know, demands.
Yeah.
And I don't under here it is again. I don't really understand Facebook, how it's still so relevant to all these things. And yet when I talk to individual people, I don't really know anybody who uses Facebook on a regular basis, but maybe it's just a self-selecting kind of thing. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, for us in gardening, obviously the older audience skews there. So that's been good for us. I think, just watching a couple other garden creators, they've done really well, but yeah, I mean, I'm the same as you. I'm like, look, people are watching it, so I'm going to keep posting, but
it just seems like they're out of the conversation when it comes to social media anymore.
Certainly out of video. So, yeah.
They seem like that social media platform that doesn't even want to be a social media platform anymore. They're interested in the Meta stuff and
they're going to the metaverse.
They got a different trajectory, and that ends up, so they have that death rattle sound to them where it's like, you guys aren't even focusing on what we're supposed to be here for. And I guess that seems so archaic now however, you're still actively putting stuff out there and you're designing it for that particular platform. And I remember not too long ago, I saw a tweet exchange that you were involved in, and someone, just a random Twitter question where it was like, if you could have, what was it? It was like 1 million YouTube subscribers. Yeah. 10 million, let's just pick some random numbers, 10 million TikTok followers, 5 million Instagram followers versus 1 million YouTube followers, which one would you pick?
Yeah.
And you were like, 100% hands down, I would pick 1 million. Like, YouTube would always be my choice. That is still true today.
Yeah, I think there was a couple of questions I answered like that, because I love getting into weird, not like arguments, but like debates or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Only on Twitter. Only on Twitter does this.
I know. Well, it's just like, I just have a certain perspective, and maybe I'm wrong, but I have a certain perspective on like creating and content and platforms and stuff. And I think the question was like, would you rather have 100,000 email newsletter subscribers or 1 million Twitter or 1 million YouTube subscribers? And I was like, I knew the bait of the question. The bait was, you own your list. So you own the 100,000. And you don't own YouTube in case something were to go wrong. But I was like, it's short-sighted, because the optionality and the second order sort of growth effects on YouTube are so much stronger that one thing can build the other. You cannot build, really, in my opinion, the YouTube from the newsletter. You can easily build the newsletter from the YouTube. And there's an algorithmic monster at play that's going to help you scale even further. So I thought it was a short-sighted question, but I got why he was asking it, you know?
Yeah. Have you seen these gardening channels? Well, I was looking at some of your content and searching gardening. And so now there's these, like, you've probably know about these women who are just like, it's basically softcore porn.
Yeah, yeah.
Gardening? It's like its own thing now.
I don't know what to call that category, but there's definitely some thumbnails that make you like, look.
And the whole video is just geared towards they're just, it's totally sexualized. Yeah. And it's just like this, it's titillating R-rated stuff. It's for people who don't know the rest of the internet exists. And
yeah.
Can we get some channel names just for
reference,
just for research purposes?
Wolf of the Wild is.
Oh, yeah.
There we go.
Wolf of the Wild. Go. Yeah, no, I know of that one.
And the comments are hilarious because it's all just guys simping. They're like, I really like your gardening content. They're trying to be like the guy who rises above the
yeah, like, oh, like
I know most people are here but I'm here because
I'm the nice guy.
I'm the one who actually sees your tips, you know, or whatever. Yeah, I mean, look, like it's this whole thing of like, if you have to think everyone has their own goal, right? So like, whatever, she's doing what she's doing. I really could care less, but I always end up thinking from my own lens. I always end up being like, okay, well, whatever you lead with is what you're known for. So how are you going to build a significant business off of that? But then I go, okay, well, not everyone's actually trying to do that, so that's fine.
No. She's getting followers, probably pretty good AdSense, judging by the amount
she's
of
probably,
you know, views.
She's probably banking. She probably has a couple other accounts that are a little more subscription-only, you know? So it is what it is. Yeah. But no, it's a thing.
Follow-up question. Are you planning on doing any of these videos yourself?
You know what I did do is I did... In garden world, doesn't sound real, but there is a holiday called World Naked Gardening Day. And I did a pose in my garden. I like actually posed with like a water can in front of me or whatever. But that's the only thing I've done like that. But no.
Yeah. Hey, getting to your channel there, I really like what you've done with bringing in your other, like, I guess, co-hosts, right? People who are also presenting. Mm-hmm. You've got, is there a total of two other people now? I saw it on your recent
video. A third coming soon, hopefully.
It's a real nice blend, and you've done this in such a way that it wasn't jarring. It's not like, okay, where did Kevin go? Mm-hmm, you know, all of a sudden you're there, that another guy takes another topic and so forth. Well done.
It was the most scary thing I've done, I think, for creating, because obviously, I mean, we raised some capital for Epic, so that kind of changed our ability to execute certain things. But part of that strategy is like the whole entity can't just be relying on my face and voice and personality anymore. Like, obviously, that's like the spirit of it still. But if it only is that, then, you know, if you're raising money or if you ever wanted to sell a portion of the business in the future or anything like that, like, you kind of can't. You're sort of just stuck, you know? Yeah. And so trying to turn it into more of a group, like Bon Appetit with the Test Kitchen or some of these like sort of culinary groups or whatever. I'm like, I think that's the direction. Plus in gardening, it makes so much sense because I only know so much and I only live in one place and I only have the space I have. And so, you know, Chris up in Vancouver, she has a different growing area, growing zone, different horticultural knowledge. Hopefully we're bringing someone on for ornamentals and flowers soon, which we do, but we don't do all the time. And so even creating like secondary channels or properties around that and having her come into the main stuff, but also have her own world that's a sub-brand of Epic, I think would make a lot of sense. Plus, it just like relieves some of the pressure off of me too.
And it's been delightful to see Chris. Because coming from Toronto, I love following your content, but sometimes it's frustrating simply because
you can't do it. Yeah.
You know, you're doing it there in November and we're still holding out. I do. Let's actually turn this conversation to, I have a couple gardening questions
if you don't mind.
I mean, come on. here's a big one, because I'm really confused as to what the definition of a weed is. What is your definition of a weed?
So the definition of a weed is really the thing, any plant you personally don't want to be where it is. Besides that, there's not such thing as a weed. Like in a botanical sense, there's no weed in a botanical sense. Just like actually there's no such thing as a vegetable, botanically speaking. It's just the things we eat that aren't sweet enough to call a fruit, basically. But fruits are a real botanical term. But anyways, yeah, I mean, typically you think of weeds as just things that grow with minimal inputs so that they grow so much that they're annoying. But you know, you could have a weed that's an herb you planted last year that just sprouted up everywhere and you liked it last year. Now you don't. And that's a weed for you. You know,
I always think a field of dandelions looks beautiful.
Oh yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah. Most people think of that as a weed and that's like a fully edible plant. Like the whole plant's usable, you know?
We have a bunch of wildflowers that just kind of grow along the sides of highways and whatnot. And during like actually right now is in and around that time where just everything is in full bloom and you have these beautiful different colors and you're like, wow, those would all be considered weeds, I guess, if you were like, I don't want to grow this stuff here. However, it speaks to growing things which grow well in the area that you live. And that's something that this is the first year that I've really started to become more mindful of that. And how important is that, especially for someone getting into gardening for the first time, to grow things which are actually easy to grow versus trying to be like, I want strawberries. So I and they end up getting frustrated because you're like picking these difficult things.
I mean, I would say there's a blend. Like for me, you know, people are like, well, what are the easiest things to grow? And you say, okay, well, radish, you know, turnip or whatever. It's like, okay, sure, but how many of us just love slamming radishes? You know, like I personally don't. So there's definitely a time and a place for them, but just because something's easy doesn't mean it should be the thing you grow. Because I would say grow the things you care about eating and that you love, and then add the dimension of, okay, is it even possible? Like if you wanted to do mangoes, Chad, maybe go to the store and buy those ones, because it's not happening in Toronto. You know, it barely happens here in San Diego. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like I say, the thing you want to harvest the most is probably the thing you're going to spend the most time on and actually succeed with.
So my criteria is similar to that, but it's always been had a space element to it. Like for me, it doesn't make sense to grow like a lot of lettuce because it's pretty easy to buy lettuce. Lettuce to me, homegrown lettuce to me doesn't taste that much different than I can get at the farmer's market or wherever. And it just, it seems like it just takes up so much space. I have to like cut a whole bunch of it for one meal. Or like corn would be another example of something that I think it would just take up so much space. So yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, corn does take a lot of space, but fresh corn is pretty good, I have to say. Yeah, it's pretty solid. Sweet.
But it's a commitment to grow. I grew corn the first thing because I'm like, I love corn. I'm going to grow corn, no problem. And I planted like six, and I had six plants, and then it took me 2.5 months to have like one meal with corn involved.
Yeah, I know.
It's like,
yeah.
I guess.
I know. Yeah, I mean, I think like the things that are really fun to grow that you actually get, like tomatoes, obviously, right? Like peppers, your favorite, like shishitos this year for us, we grew a ton of, hundreds. It's one of my favorite easy peppers to eat because you blister it in a pan, salt, pepper, a little whatever, and you're good. But yeah, I mean, half the stuff we grow at Epic, it's just like because it's interesting. So my recommendations are so different now. You know, we'll grow like, I tried growing a giant cabbage for 3 years. I couldn't figure it out. Like, couldn't make it work. But not saying anyone else should because it's just like nonsensical, you know.
I started growing Brussels sprouts this year for the first time, and I saw you have quite a bit of space dedicated to Brussels sprouts over there.
We did. So this year, that's something that you can grow better than I can, Chad, is anything like Brussels, cabbages, broccoli, cauliflower, collards, like that kind of stuff, kale. You should have an easier time because your late winter spring is actually cold and mine's not. And that's what those things want. So yeah, I figured it out, but like for us, I have to plant it in basically November, like November 1st, grow it through the whole winter and harvest it before spring. Only time I could grow it. Otherwise, I got no chance.
Yeah. It's interesting that you say kale. Kale is like, kale makes you feel like a gardening superhero. Because it like it lasts for so, like at least the ones here.
Yeah.
Right. And it just goes. Yeah. And it tastes actually pretty good. I don't traditionally like kale, but I don't know.
You can massage your own garden. Down, you know. And
yeah, you can. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah.
I love roasting it. If you roast kale, it gets crispy. Oh my God, it's so good.
Yeah, it's solid. Kale chips.
Yeah, also kale good. Chips.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Follow up question: why do my tomatoes suck?
Yeah, me too.
You have to send me some pics, guys. there's a lot of reasons why they can suck.
You just had a video on it today about the myths. Yeah,
send me a couple pics. Yeah, well, you know what would be funny is I actually want to do this because so I found that reaction videos have done well on the channel if they're done well. And so I've reacted to TikToks. I've reacted to like 5 minute crafts and all that. And I just asked my whole team to send me videos of their gardens, and I'm going to react to my own team's gardens. But I thought it would be fun. Like, if you guys want to send me like a horizontal video,
I will.
And like 1 minute narration, I can do like, so that here, let's even plan it out. Like, let's do the title, right? It'll be Gardener Reacts to Big YouTubers Gardens.
That's YouTubers, you know? Gardens. That's a and really then, good idea.
And then I'll just absolutely shred everyone.
I want that in a
funny way. I think that'll do really well.
Oh, let's do it. Yeah.
So if you guys are down, like a minute video, and I'll react.
So
to you guys.
All we have are four tomato plants, and this year for some reason it got to the point where they just weren't growing well, and I think we just stopped giving them a lot of care and attention, and then it kind of snowballed into this thing. But there's still tomatoes on there, but yeah.
I'll say for me, like, obviously, we're a little extreme over here. We have like 20 raised beds and then a whole backyard garden. But putting irrigation in this year, everything's just way better. I think we were just chronically underwatering our garden by a little bit just by nature of the size of it, you know?
Can we talk about watering for a second? Because one of my questions was going to be like, it really doesn't seem, well, I mean, obviously it's very cliche to say it's not like something people talk about because clearly it is, but it doesn't seem to be like the most important thing. And now, after a few years of really getting the hang of all of the other stuff, which seemed like a mystery, the one thing that still remains a complete mystery to me is
when
to water something.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is hard because so like the craziest part about the garden is like, let's say a classic summer garden, right? Like tomatoes, peppers, eggplants, onions, cilantro, whatever. Really, that would never show up in the wild because if you look at where all those plants evolved, they're just not from the same place on Earth. And so like a classic garden is actually totally abnormal and unnatural if you really think about it, which means that you can't just apply the same rules to all these plants. Like if you grow a Mediterranean herb garden, like sage, oregano, thyme, that kind of thing. Well, those all evolved in that area. They want like dryish soil, not super nutrient dense, decent amount of heat. So you can put them all in the same place, do the same thing. But with like a summer garden, you know, your tomatoes want like a deep, infrequent water once or twice a week. Your peppers probably similar, but just less water overall. And they're a smaller plant. Your eggplants like more heat. So typically they'd be in a hotter area of the garden that probably dries out a little more. You know what I mean? And so it kind of gets into this whole, like, that's why we try to say, like, we're going to teach you how to be a gardener, not just like how to grow a plant. Cause you have to think about some of that. But I mean, general rules of thumb is if you water early-ish in the morning and you give things more water less often, typically that works out. For like deep rooted stuff like tomatoes or peppers or summer crops. But then like, let's say Steve did want to grow lettuce and he had a huge thing of lettuce. Well, lettuce, we're growing it for its leaves. Its leaves are really thin and its roots aren't that deep. So you can't really water that every 4 days. You kind of have to give it a little bit every so often so it doesn't dry out. And then a good rule of thumb on just actually finding out if you need to water is kind of just taking a trowel and digging in and seeing how wet it is. You know, if it's dry at like four or 5 inches deep, you better hit it.
And it gets even more confusing sometimes with the indoor plants. And I saw that you shared a Instagram story, I think it was yesterday, about that meter that kind of goes in. Yeah. It gives you a really quick visual. I went out and got one of those little meters that you stick in and it literally tells you if you need to, because I find it's even more difficult with indoor plants and potted plants to know the water.
Yeah.
Situation.
It is because again, it's like these are all plants that grew up in different environments, right? And I just was at this whole World of Houseplants exhibit in this beautiful greenhouse, and we were doing a tour there and we're talking about the same thing. He's like, look, it's called World of Houseplants, but like none of these plants evolved in a home. And so what we try to do is we say, okay, well, this thing came from Borneo. Where in Borneo did it come from? What was the humidity, the light conditions, the temperature, the soil qualities? And we try to literally recreate it, but obviously they're a botanical garden. They can do that, you know? And also like for me in indoor, number one, I kind of forget sometimes just because I'm focused on outdoor. And then like number two, it's in a pot. So sometimes the soil gets kind of crusty and like you might water and the water kind of like runs through it, but doesn't really get moist, you know? So you kind of have to just, I don't know. It's a different mentality. I'm okay at it. Not great.
You're friends with James Priglione. He has a really large gardening channel. He just went over a million subscribers, which is kind of cool to see. I love his energy. Mm-hmm. It's really cool to watch him. But he, in a recent video, he talked about how, and I don't remember the word for it. It was like polyponic growing or something, where he has, he doesn't grow like, here's an area for tomatoes, here's the area for squash. They're all interspersed. It's a different philosophy of growing. Is this something you're familiar with? Do you recommend that, or is that difficult to do?
No, it's actually, in my opinion, it's a little bit easier. Like, so I think it's probably polyculture.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, you know, in my my pepper bed in the backyard, there's a lot of peppers, but there's also zinnias. There's some sunflowers, and there's some like onions and stuff sprinkled in, just because why not? Like, it's going to bring some pollination in, going to bring some beauty, some color, and then the plants will kind of like selectively shade other things depending on how you plant it. But yeah, it's kind of like, I'm trying to think of a good analogy. I guess it's similar to food, where like you want to balance like acidity, fat, and astringency or whatever, right? You know, like you certainly can just monocrop it. I actually have a pepper bed that's only peppers and it's producing just fine. But from like a beauty perspective, it also helps a lot to kind of mix things up.
Right.
Question number four from, I have Kevin Espiritu trapped on my podcast, so I'm going to ask all my gardening questions to him. How long do seeds last?
It depends on the seed by a lot, actually.
I'm sure.
So like some seeds, I think lettuce is a pretty, pretty fast spoiling one, but that's like maybe 2-3 years or something like that. And then obviously there's seeds that can literally be stored for thousands. But generally you want to store them cool, dark, dry. That's going to extend it as much as you can. But like one thing you could do is like just go buy seed packs or ask for seed packs at a store that are a year old. You'll load up because they can't really sell them. and they're still pretty much perfectly viable. There's like nothing wrong with them. But you have to stamp a number, you know, a date on the seed pack. So 2021, can't sell it anymore, even though it's fine.
Hmm. Can you freeze them?
You can freeze them. The problem is if you freeze them, you'll want to put it in a freezer you don't open a lot, because it'll, like, you'll open it, the water, it'll condense really quickly if it gets too warm, and then it'll actually weirdly start to germ the seed and freeze it. So usually it's a fridge. Like most of, like any nursery you go to or any seed producer, it's always like a cool fridge, like a walk-in cooler type thing.
I asked the question because I specifically noticed the very specific wording that they put on the package, which is like, sell by this date. Mm-hmm. Or it was like, mm-hmm. you know, they worded it in a way where it's like, it's not expiring at this date. So, but what I kind of gleaned from that is like, even the fastest spoiling seeds are good for a couple of years for the most part.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're not mm-hmm. buying last year's seeds and being like, well, I should prioritize this year's seeds.
Yeah, like what we'll do is like, I'll dig into my seed box and I have like just way too many, you know, and so you can do like a germination test. So an old, couple years old pack, you can just put it in some like paper towel, you know, like a moist paper towel in a bag or something, sprinkle 10 of them on there, see how many sprout. If over half sprout, you're good to go. You just need to sprinkle a little more to make sure that they germinate. If you get none, just throw the pack away and you're good.
Does everything yeah. benefit more from being started indoors or in very controlled circumstances, or are there things that are way better served where you just put a seed in the ground and you move on?
Yeah, it's definitely a mix. Like I would say you could start everything indoors if you wanted to in theory, but in practice you probably wouldn't. Like beans these days, I don't really recommend starting indoors, just because when you transplant them, they kind of don't like it that much. It takes right. them a couple weeks to kind of reset themselves. Beans, peas, there's things that like root crops like radishes or turnips, it's like, you sure you can, but it's a big seed, it's not a hard thing to germinate and protect outdoors, and it grows in the ground, so you might as well just keep it where it is. Corn, another good example. And then there's stuff that you more or less have to start indoors, like really tiny seeds that you need like a fine mix, like chamomile, right? It's hard to start that outdoors unless you just let it spread and just let whatever start. That's the other way to do it. That's how those tiny seeds kind of propagate themselves.
Got it.
Do most gardeners though buy the starter plants rather than the seeds? I've never started anything from a seed. I always just buy like the small tomato plants in the little pots. Maybe that's my problem. Maybe that's why they're not doing real well.
No, I mean, the seeds, the tomatoes you can buy from like the nursery usually are selected to like do pretty well in your area. Yeah. But I would say most beginner first year gardeners don't start a lot from seed. And then as you kind of go down the journey, there's just stuff you can't grow unless you get the seed. Like there's probably 95% of the tomatoes you can ever grow, you'd have to grow from seed. Mm. Same with peppers, same with all these other things. So if you want access to variety, then you kind of have to do seed. But I don't have a problem either way. It's just more expensive to go from starts, but it also saves you time.
I want to add a couple more myths to that tomato video.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if these are myths or not. Here's what I've heard, that you should never water the plants and get water on the leaves.
It's only at the base.
It's
better, but it's not the end of the world if it was to get wet, because obviously it rains.
Because I think that they grow tomatoes like in the Midwest where it rains all the time, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I think it's one of those things where like, don't sign the plant up for it, but if it does rain, then it's fine. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I wouldn't worry about that too much. The only case I guess I would is like if it's a really bushy tomato, it's not like well pruned, then the interior is going to stay wet for so long, it'll be nice and humid and disease and stuff can crop up.
Okay, that one's busted. Next one that I always remember is don't put mulch down on them. And I think I asked you about this when we planted ours, because my wife put mulch on them. And I was like, oh, I don't know if you're supposed to do that. I think that's...
On like the tomato plant?
Yeah, on the ground.
You totally can. Yeah, you totally can. I would say like don't build like a castle right up next to the stem, but you can definitely mulch around the stem.
Should
it's probably
you?
Preferred.
Oh,
yeah, I mean... We put like shredded straw on most of our beds, because the light, it helps reflect the light, because it's a light color, and then also it kind of buffers the soil and you don't have to water as much, so it's better.
I want to bring in, so I got these, so every year I buy some plants for like the outdoor patio area. And I get palm trees because it's wonderful during the warm season to be able to have some nice palm trees. I wanted to like bring them in last year. So I did. And I just brought them in and I started watering them and just it went off the rails. Is it that easy to be able to do that in a climate like mine where I have to obviously bring something in? Or am I just not going to be able to provide what a plant like that needs to be able to survive the winter, to be able to like
that's the key. Yeah. The key is it's not so much can you grow it when the season's good, it's just can you keep it alive while the season's bad, right? So I would say I have a bunch of people who will grow citrus in cold climates, but what they do is they put it in a pot and they bring it indoors and then they still have it under some kind of horticultural light while that's happening. Otherwise citrus is just not used to having that cold of temps and that dark of a winter. So you gotta invest in that. It's rewarding if you can get it going, but obviously, you know, it depends on how deep you want to be in the gardening game.
You basically need a space dedicated to being able to support.
Like you need like a winter nursery almost, you know, to keep it warm and light enough.
Get yourself a greenhouse, Chad.
That's actually the plan.
I'm working on one myself.
Are you really?
Yeah. 8x10-foot greenhouse coming in next year, probably. Yeah.
I noticed you have chickens now too, don't you?
I was just about to say that. The epic coop.
Dude, the chickens have been awesome. I've been getting, on my birthday, I got the first, it was the first day I got an egg from every chicken that day. So six. Really cool. I mean, it's been amazing. I've been giving eggs to friends and making omelets and I learned how to, I bought like one of those Blackstone griddles. Have you heard of those things? It's like a flat top griddle for outdoors. So that it's like, it looks like a grill. It's just a flat top, a cast iron thing. Cause I've always had this dream of being like a short order cook. I don't know why. just watching them work. It just seems so like they're in the flow.
Yeah.
And so I have this backyard griddle and I looked up how to make omelets like griddle style. And so now I can make omelets with my eggs and garden produce, like a vegetable omelet or whatever. And it's so satisfying. So having the chickens has been great.
I have a feeling it was like a couple years ago, maybe this was a pandemic thing, is a lot of people were buying these backyard chickens and I think it kind of became a trend and I think it's kind of waning. I know we had two neighbors, our next door neighbor and people behind us, and it was, you would hear those chickens all the time, you know, in the morning and everything. Here, you know, and we're hardly out in the country, but then they got rid of theirs eventually. And then the neighbors, they got rid of theirs. And I don't know what happened to them, but I think that it just becomes like people buy them thinking, oh, this is great, we'll get eggs and everything. But I think it's a lot more work than they think it's going
to
be.
Interesting. Yeah. I haven't found it to be much work at all, to be honest with you. But I mean, my coop is a little extra. It's a little fancy. So that's probably why. But like it has a water bar that you fill a 50 gallon tank up once a month and they drink from that. It has not an automatic feeder, but it has like a big hopper sort of style feeder. So I throw a couple bags in every month, throw scraps in, collect the eggs, clean it every so often, not even that often. And
maybe people just get tired of eating eggs.
Could be that. Yeah. I mean,
an egg isn't something I eat that often, really. I guess if I had them, I would probably do them every day.
I eat a decent amount. Yeah, I learned how to make fresh pasta from the eggs.
Oh, nice.
So I bought those like little KitchenAid like rollers, you know? And so now we're making pasta with fresh homegrown backyard eggs. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, I'm finding ways, I guess, to use them.
Is there a predator issue? Or is there any animals that could pose an issue to the chickens?
Yeah, so there's like... There's birds of prey in our area. There's raccoons, skunks, opossums, cats... and coyotes, actually. I've only seen a few, but yeah, so the coop is protected. Like the coop has like a cage, you know, and then the bottom of the coop, because these raccoons are like dig under, has like this, it's just like mesh, remesh sort of stuff that prevents them from digging. And then you're good. As long as the coop's absolutely secure, like I even have carabiners on the door latches because raccoons can open a normal door latch. You'll be fine. Nothing will get in.
Do you have any pest problems with the plants or garden, or do you have any animal proofing? Okay, so this is my final question.
Yeah.
Can you give me any animal proofing tips?
What do you have in your area?
The normal woodland creatures, but the biggest issue is bunnies.
Bunnies? Okay. Yeah, so for bunnies, you don't really have a choice, except because I've seen, you know, the raised beds that we sent you guys?
Yeah.
Yes.
Even the tall ones, I've seen a bunny jump into the tall from the ground, so like 30 inches. So at that point, it's like, okay, well, height, it either needs to be way too high, which makes no sense, or I just have to cover it with something. And so most of the time, it's just like you use some sort of cloth or sort of wire and build like a little thing around it. Or trap the bunny somehow, but that's to your own.
if
you want to do that, you know.
Yeah, there's a whole other element to gardening then when you have this, like,
battling. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It's taking the enjoyment away.
Yeah. All right, well, no, totally.
I do my best to also just try to grow what they don't like. Try to find other stuff that they're not interested in, and it's the easiest kind of.
You could also like grow an area for them, you know, that's away from your garden. Like the stuff they absolutely like, just grow it in that area. And that might work.
That's an excellent tip, but like a little a little buffet for them. Yeah, exactly. It's
Our problem is we have deer across the street.
Yeah.
And so then the front yard, we just got it re-landscaped. We finally finished all of our yard. We have no more grass left, which I'm thrilled about. It's just all natural landscape.
Nice.
But that was the biggest concern, is deer-proof vegetation, which is mostly a lot of grasses, and it's all indigenous stuff, sort of. But even when they say deer proof, if it's the drought, heavy heat of the summer, those deer are going to come down and pretty much eat.
Yeah.
One way or another.
There's not a lot you can do. You can sort of, you know, try to avoid, you know, like bird baths is a good draw for deer, and you don't want that.
Oh,
and, you know, all this water. And
so. Yeah. I mean, I don't have deer in my area, but as far as I'm aware, the only foolproof thing is a 7 foot or taller fence,
because
they can jump over 6 feet.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, well, you could build like a wooden sort of, well, actually might be an interesting project for you to do on the channel, Steve.
Well, we're just going with the theory that the neighbors have tastier stuff than we do now. So
there you go.
Go to their place, not ours.
That'll work.
I should plant that little bunny garden in my neighbor's yard, because then they'll also just hang out over
there.
They won't even be near my yard.
That's Sabotage.
Write that one down.
I think I've asked you this before. What do your neighbors think? Because you're in a kind of a suburban neighborhood.
Yeah, it's pretty suburban.
Do they all like you and their friends? And because you're gardening and everything is right there in the front. Plus, you're shooting video and everything.
Yeah. Yeah, I think for the most part, my next door neighbors specifically don't have a problem with it. They're pretty nice. I don't know people across the street too much. Directly across, I do. They just like, hey, what's up? I think there's definitely been some times where stuff's been loud. Like we installed a pond in the backyard with like big machinery, but that's like short periods of time.
Right.
I think generally speaking, I mean, I saw the house before on Google Maps before I bought it, and it was just true garbage looking, like totally run down. So I think anything was better than that. And I think it looks pretty good. So they're probably fine. Yeah.
The pond looks great.
Thank you.
The pond does look great.
Yeah.
You have how much water do you have in your tanks right now?
So the pond, that's the pond part, is like 1500 gallons. Underneath the patio that's right next to the pond is 3000 more, I think, or 2000 more.
Wow.
And then the big water tank that's behind the pond is 5000. So I got water. I mean, I got water in San Diego.
And that is pretty much it. That sounds like that is like the secret elixir of life. And especially with the way that it's all working now, where you don't have like, it's set it and forget it for you.
Set it and forget it. Yeah. Yeah. And then like what's cool too, is like the more you cultivate the landscape, like when I put in certain trees or certain understory brush and that kind of stuff, I will not need to water as much, because it will then be blocking the ground and evaporation won't happen as much and blah, 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 you know? So eventually my water use, it'll go up for a few years as I establish. And then I'm hoping it goes down, as evaporation goes down.
You also have the Epic warehouse. How many SKUs do you have now, man? You got quite a few products.
That's a good question. Over 100.
Man,
look at you.
Over 100. Yeah. We have a new team member starting on Monday. To sort of help manage the categories on the store, and bring on, like, it's become a full-time job basically to like reach out talk to vendors, like the products we love, to like yeah. go in and initiate a contact with that person, say, hey, look, we love this chicken feeder. Is there a way that we can work together? Can we get it on the store? What are the economics? How's the shipping work? How's the tech work? Will you do a box for us? Like all that kind of stuff, you know, has become a job. So now we have a team member starting on Monday for that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Are you happy with your role in the company since you got the capital and expanded at such a really fast rate?
Yeah, it happened fast. Yeah, we were at, myself was the only full-time employee in 21. I just had contractors, you know, and then I think we'll be at 21 as of Monday.
Wow.
So yeah, I mean, it's a lot right now because we're hiring fast. So like a lot of things sort of break and need to be managed and all that. And I'm playing the dual role of the CEO, but also still the face of most of the content, you know? So there's a lot of effort that goes into that and a lot less free time than before. But that's part of the game, you know. It's fun. It's fun to build, and like the team's awesome, and we're having a lot of success. So can't really ask for more, you know.
Are you on a Shopify backend, or are you using something else for your website?
Yeah, we're on Shopify.
Do you have the integration for all the stuff at the merch shelf on YouTube? And
I did get that set up. Did you guys get it set up?
Is it the Kaya thing? Because there's
it's not that. Shopify, it's the specific
and,
Shopify one.
Shopify and Google have been doing some fascinating things. So there's also Live. This is a kind of a new thing that's coming out. Being able to, so they're following in line with what Amazon was doing for a little while, where they were doing kind of like a home shopping thing where influencers would talk about Amazon products. And while they're talking about Amazon products in the chat, you could pin the product to the top of the chat or something like that. And now you're going to be able to do that on YouTube, let alone mm-hmm. have the merch shelf display in your description of the videos. As is, we do quite well just from the like organic, you know, traffic flow of people finding the videos and then going through, and it's just by having a Shopify website.
And that's what we were talking about, is they don't have to do any extra, you know, go through any hoops to get to this stuff. So
exactly.
I met with a rep from Google just this last week, because they reached out to me about, there's like people beta testing this thing called QAYA, Kaya, and this is mm-hmm. what I think YouTube and Google are wanting to integrate. It includes Shopify, and it'll include all these like t-shirt merch and everything, but you can put all of this stuff in a single place that is like directly, just like Shopify, directly below your YouTube videos. So you'll have the store right there with, you know, single click, buy what you want. And so I was, you know, looking into that for possibly as another way of selling courses, because then I don't have to send people mm-hmm. through several clicks to get to the thing. So mm-hmm. I don't know. I have a feeling that might be where Google is headed.
Yeah. Yeah, I know Jacques, one of our guys on the team, he's testing Kaya because he can't connect his accounts to our store, because you can only do it for one, unfortunately. And then I am on the main stuff doing what you're doing, Chad, where it's directly from Shopify. It's importing the actual product shelf directly from Shopify. The only thing I'm hanging up on is right now on our videos, when you click, you have to check out on Epic Gardening. And there is a feature that you can check out with Google, but I can't get it set up for some reason. So I need to get that set up.
Yeah, yes.
And do you guys have it check out on Google?
Well, we run into the interesting issue of having this happen in our videos, but it happens in the United States. We in Canada actually can't see the shelf because there's just some limitations. So we can't actually see our own shelf, even though we know that our shelf is there, if that makes sense.
Oh my God.
You need to use NordVPN.
No, it's very
true. You should use Nord. Very true. Yeah, you should use Nord.
We are operating at the speed of Canadian.
Hey, you guys are almost going to hit 2 million, Chad.
We are just, and I noticed, and the same thing for you, and the same thing for Ramsey. Yeah, actually, we are all just.
Mine's going to be a while. I'm like at that 1.85, and it's just like, because I am not posting.
It's going kind of slow.
Yeah, I'm starting to pick it back up again, but I was the last 6 months I've just been in a funk with YouTube. I feel like I'm just really? So over it, but now I'm starting to get back into it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you have such a backlog, right? Of content that you're, cause your main income generator is your course, right?
Yeah. But see, you know, that's the thing is I always thought that backlog content, oh, that's great. As long as you got 14 years of stuff on there, but if you're not regularly posting videos, YouTube doesn't, they won't even recommend that backlog stuff. So they, YouTube, you have to just keep posting constantly for them.
You just got to keep going.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Usually at around this time, we ask what someone is doing next, like what's coming next. We've always had good juicy stuff from you. So is there anything really exciting or fun coming up?
Oh man. There's a couple things that could happen with Epic that would take it to like a true next level. Being like, there's a lot of companies that would want to join Epic, for example. So if we could make that happen,
you just swallow them up.
That's the next level. Other than that, it's mostly just kind of building the team and, you know, kind of grinding away.
I think
away.
It's impressive. You've become really one of the biggest gardening brands around.
We did it the reverse way, right, than most people, because we built the audience and then we put the products behind it. To me, I like that way more because you can start it with just a person, like it's just me. So it's low capital to start. And then you build trust, which is, to me, much stronger than just having a product. And then from there, you find the best products, which you know of because you've been doing the craft. So it all just kind of makes sense. But yeah, especially after COVID, but I like to think Epic had a part of it. Like there's a lot of garden creators these days. There's like hundreds of people at like 50K on whatever platform. And I'm like, wow, like there's like so many of us now. It's crazy.
Do you think that these big like chemical companies are they changing? Or are they still like Ortho? They're like still gung-ho with like, yeah, chemical up those plants of yours. Or are they, I don't really follow that stuff. Because it seems to me like everybody growing is on board with organic gardening. Nobody's pouring that crap.
Yeah. Well, the way the biggest companies are playing it is they're just playing both sides with sub brands that they own. I mean, they're billion-dollar companies or hundreds of million-dollar companies. They can just buy a company, call it something else, operate it, get all the revenue. Consumers none the wiser that, you know, X brand like Scotts Miracle-Gro also owns their favorite organics line. They have no clue, you know. So they're doing everything.
Yeah, is that like the worst thing you could pour on your tomatoes, or is it okay?
I mean, it works perfectly fine.
Well,
it's just a synthetic, you know. That's all. It's just, you know, it's fertilizer salts that are kind of mined from wherever, and it's just a philosophy thing, you know.
Yeah.
I'd rather not, and so I don't. But
steroids for your plant.
yeah. Like. I mean, like, it makes the soil almost more like a hydroponic media than a soil, right? Because you're just, if you have to continually add nutrients to the soil over and over and over and over again, that's what hydroponics is, in a sense. Yeah.
If you learned a lot about stuff during this particular episode, you're going to have your socks knocked off if you go over to YouTube and check out Kevin's Epic Gardening channel. Or you can go to TikTok, or you can go to Twitter, you can go to Facebook, you can go to epicgardening.com. Is there any other platform that I've forgotten?
Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, our store.
OnlyFans.
Yeah, we're on OnlyFans. Oh, yeah. I just pose, you know, fruits in the way.
That gardening, you know, whatever. That watering.
It was that one gardening.
Tools, you know. Yeah, totally.
You were out there on that photo shoot.
Actually, that's our multi-million-dollar line of business right there. So secret's out.
Kevin, it was great talking to you again.